As I started to experience seeing in different ways as I was growing and developing as an artist, this verse struck me in a different way, because I really saw this kind of two groups of people and ways of knowing and communicating. Those of the world who can judge things of the world, right? They're humans in their society, in their context, and they can discern those things. But then there's a different way of knowing, right? That is spiritual, that is not necessarily rational or logical, that maybe utilizes other senses that we don't normally, in ways that we don't normally utilize in our everyday living. And that those who have that way of seeing, right, they can judge matters both spiritual and worldly. It's kind of a more comprehensive way of knowing and seeing things. And just that the concept of knowing spiritually was opened up to me in studying art, because I had experience and was learning to experience new ways of seeing that wasn't necessarily intellectual, right? It wasn't a rational argument or a logical way of presenting and understanding information. And so not that viewing art is necessarily a spiritual way of seeing, but from my own experience, just the fact of having a different means of looking and understanding and knowing kind of breaks our reliance a little bit on the ways that we have been taught in this society to judge what's right and wrong and what's good and true and what works and doesn't work. And so maybe by breaking that reliance, then we can be more open and receptive to a spiritual way of knowing. So that's my hope, at least. All right. And so I want to start with a little bit of my journey, a couple of key experiences that I had while I was in college. Because I'll be honest with you, I didn't really get art. I was very good at drawing. I could, you know, you put something up there, I could draw it, and it would look like what it is that I'm trying to draw. I had that skill. I'd had it all my life. But when I was exposed to, in some of my art classes at Pepperdine, to some of this more abstract art, I was like, what is this stuff? I do not get this. I don't understand it. And this quote, you know, the artist meant it to be that way. I was like, that's a load of crock, you know? I was like, no way, because why would you do something like this? Oops. If you could draw like this, it didn't make sense to me. And not coincidentally, all four of those images I just showed are all by Picasso. All right. You may be familiar with Picasso-ish looking stuff like this and not realizing his skill in being able to naturally render something. In fact, this one on the left, I believe he did when he was about 12 years old. So yeah, he had some mad skills. I feel I should comment on the lack of clothing on that one. There's a side of me that, in a nod to what's going on in Florida, wants to try to include as much nudity in this class as possible. I'll try to control myself a little bit. All right. But anyways, I didn't get it because I couldn't do that as well as he could. I could, you know, this guy, I could do that. But yeah, it wasn't doing it for me. Until I had this experience where one of my drawing professors took the class. There was an exhibit focused around Picasso's Weeping Women. And this is a series of paintings that he did and that maybe needs a little bit of historical backdrop. So probably one of his most famous images is this one here. It's called Guernica. Painted in 1937. The historical context of this Spain, Picasso is, though he lived and worked in France, was born in Spain. Spain was going through a civil war from 1936 to 39. And there was the Republicans versus the Nationalists, I think is how they broke off. And so the Nationalist leader requested help from fascist Italy and Nazi Germany. And on April 26, which happens to be my wife's birthday, she wasn't alive back then, in 1937, they bombed, Nazi Germany bombed the city called Guernica. And it was kind of a cultural hub in northern Spain. There was actually a military outpost just outside of the town that was completely unscathed. All the bombing happened in the center of town where there was a marketplace. Many of the men were gone because they were already off fighting in the war. And so really all the people that were there were mostly women and children. So it was considered kind of one of the first like terror bombing incidences in the war there. And so Picasso was asked to do a mural, and you can kind of get a sense of the scale there of the painting, pretty large size. And so I have this detail here from the left side of this woman holding her dead child who died in the bombing. And so while he was painting this and doing some kind of other little side sketches and preparatory drawings and working out the composition of this, he kind of hit upon this theme of these suffering mothers, these weeping women crying over their loss. And so when we went to see the exhibit that just focused on those paintings, my professor just said, you know, look around, look at whatever you like, but I just want you to notice how Picasso depicted their crying. And so here are a couple examples. The one on the left, well, I'll put it to you. What do you guys notice in how Picasso depicted their crying?
Distraught.
Yeah, there's a real emotional tenor to these, right? Yeah, yeah, that was one of the first things I noticed too. Like the eyes, the actual shape of the eyes on the one on the left are kind of teardrop shape.
The crying is the thing that almost distorts the face. It's like raggy.
The crying seems to be what's distorting the face, right? Kind of dragging, pulling down, leading, you know, I think contributing to that emotional effect. What else?
You know, like it looks sharp, like a cutting to the core of what, you know.
Yeah, very sharp, cutting, a very almost kind of violent gesture to it.
Very striking on that one on the right where it's like discolored. It's discolored in the part where the tears are coming down. And the,
yeah.
Like it draws the focus right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have that differently colored area right there. Where the tears would be coming down. I think that's supposed to be like the cloth, like a handkerchief that she's trying to dry her eyes with. We got it.
I think the absolute harshness of the agony is just so... confronts me so much. It's so glaring.
Yeah.
Painful.
Yeah, very much so.
Wendy and I were saying that it's like they're ugly crying, you know. It's mm-hmm. unlike the Renaissance paintings where it's like, you know, Mary is looking at Jesus on the cross and she's like, dab, dab,
yeah.
dab, dab, you know.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Beautiful but not pretty. Yes. One of the things I notice, well, a couple things, particularly with these two images. So the eyes being teardrop shaped on this one. This one, if you look, it's actually like bowls that are tipped over and pouring out tears. At this time, I wasn't necessarily a fan of Picasso. I was still in the whole, what is this art stuff all about? But that struck me when I saw that. You can see it especially in the left eye there where you have a tear streaming over her cheek and it's being like poured out of this bowl shape. So I was like, oh, okay, there might be to some of this. Yeah? Did you have a question? Comment? I think we're getting a mic.
You know, the pronounced details in like, in the one on the left, like the her brow, you know, it's like really focusing on, you know, like you get that wrinkled brow and you get that, the nose is red and I don't know, just the different parts of the mouth. It's like you focus in on the real details of one aspect and even the neck, you know, there's, I don't know whether it's, I don't know. But anyway, whatever, it's the real, real focus on the detail.
Yeah. And then Seth, I'll throw over here.
I noticed her hand.
Mm.
Her hand looks like it's pushing away rather than this way.
Mm. Yeah.
Like I think if someone is in that kind of agony, they don't want people right then.
Yeah, they just can't deal with anything else, yeah.
For me, the one on the left, I experience it the way I experience my own tears. I don't cry tears, but it feels like my whole stinking body is falling away. And that's almost the imagination I have, is my face is falling off when I cry, and other parts of me is just going away, and that kind of triggers that for me.
Yeah, so I was starting to get a glimpse, I think, as you are, that you don't need something very realistic looking, right, to convey some emotion, and in fact, it may be better. This might be better at conveying emotion than, you know, a pretty picture of someone actually crying, you know. But it was, the deal was kind of sealed for me to some extent. So here are some sketches that he did, both for that Guernica mural, but then also just playing with this theme. Which, kind of side note, right, this is something that when you look at an artwork, you don't often see everything that went behind it in preparing it. That even something that looks, you know, that's abstract and that just looks kind of thrown together, that, you know, maybe anyone could have done because it didn't seem to take a whole lot of skill, actually took quite a bit of preparation in terms of just working out different ideas, different ways of depicting the subject. And I cannot find the image that I actually saw at that exhibit. And trust me, I've been looking periodically on the internet for 30 years. It's one of my go-to procrastination devices. I wonder if someone's put that picture up on the web yet. but it's very similar to this one here. Woman carrying her dead child, climbing a ladder, I guess, to escape something. And the one in particular, you know, it was a pencil drawing, so you can kind of see some of the lighter pencil sketches. Some of them may have been slightly erased as he was changing things. But the image that I remember is you saw that he had drawn a very quick but very accurate line of the back of a leg, right? Kind of the slight bulge of the hamstrings going in behind the knee, come out for the calf, taper back into the ankle. I mean, just a quick line, but he knew his anatomy. He had control, just nailed it, right, as to what a leg looks like. But then he erased it, but you can still kind of see the faint erased line. And kind of turned it into a big, fat triangle, kind of not unlike the one in the middle there. Although it wasn't like the foot at the end, like the big triangle, like that was the heel, and it went back to the toes at the front. But it was the first time where I was able to actually see a decision that the artist had made, that he technically had it correct the first way, but then erased it and did it in a very abstract way. And something not really clicked as an understanding, but something kind of dislodged in a good, you know, creative destruction way of, okay, he did mean for that to happen, right? He knew, quote, how to do it, at least in my terms, where he had to look like what it was you were trying to draw. And he intentionally erased that and made it something else. And I remember saying to myself, I don't know why he did that, but I'm going to figure it out. I mean, it was almost kind of like, if it takes my whole life trying to figure out why he did that. And I think you all are actually getting a sense by just the emotional reactions that you were having to the previous paintings that we had up there, right? That there's a different way of seeing than just accurate, natural representation. Right, there's emotion that is conveyed, and that's conveyed with sharp cutting lines or distorted features that highlight certain characteristics, things of that nature, that it's a different way of seeing that's more body, physical, emotional, rather than visual, logical. So that was kind of the first experience I had. So did the artist mean it to be that way? Yes, to a certain extent. All right. It's not a one-to-one, I'm going to make this mark, this shape, this color, because it means this thing. right? It's not... Artistic markings are a language, but it's not like a word, like we have the word tree, and you think of a tree, right? It's not that, but it's the combined effect that the artist is going for. We have preparatory drawings and sketches, you know, that show the artist thinking and figuring things out and choosing to do it one way and not the other, because they've really been taking the time to try things out and looking. Another theme that I'll talk about later on in the class is, you know, none of us will ever look at an artwork to the extent that the artist did while they were making it. The time that they spend in the studio just looking leads them to see things and then do things and respond and make decisions that we're not a part of, and we would probably never look at it to that length of time. So there is that. But I mean, the amount of looking and thinking that artists do, every single little detail is there somewhat on purpose. We have what are called happy accidents when we're making artworks. Things that just happen, paint drips, you know, you slip, I don't know, something, all right? But then in that process of looking, of like, oh, you know what? That actually kind of works for what I'm going for. So there's always the decision to whatever, whether you intentionally make a mark or a mark accidentally happens by other means, there's always the decision to either change it or leave it in place. So sometimes it's not intentionally, I'm going to make this mark, but I'm seeing the effect that this mark is having on the feel of the painting, so I'm going to decide to leave it in place. Okay, my second experience was a little bit more personal. I had an assignment in my first painting class, and it was towards the end of the semester. We had started out doing kind of more realistic stuff, but then he was kind of pushing us to explore abstraction a little bit. So my professor, he would show us, usually how he would assign things is he would show us some examples of other artists and said, this is kind of what we're going for, right? Especially when you're doing abstract, you can't really give instructions on how it's supposed to be done. But he can give some examples. So he showed this artist, it's a Korean artist named Hoon Kwok, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And he's done a large variety of works, but the ones that that my professor focused on was he took this, you know, like chalice or teacup, and it wasn't like these were paintings of that, but it was more like that's a starting off point, right? You have this object that kind of focuses what you're doing, but then you come off of it and you abstract it, and it becomes just a jumping off point to explore, you know, color or line or different texture or different mark making activity. And so that was our assignment. We were supposed to find some object or make some little object, and then that would be our starting point, and then we can kind of abstract it from there. So I went digging around the studios and the art building, came across this bag of nails. These nails were huge. They were like 6-7 inches long. And I was like, wow, these just pretty cool looking. So I found a scrap piece of wood, started banging these nails through. Got about, I don't know, 6 or 7 of them, I think, just kind of poking through so that I could have like the nails coming towards me. And then, I don't know, I found some random string and kind of tied string around them. And that was my found object. Although I realize now I didn't really find that object. I made that object. Never really occurred to me until I was thinking about this. But yeah, it wasn't just a found object. I kind of made a sculptural thing first. And, you know, wasn't given any thought. I just set it up, started my painting. But a little backstory. I had been dating this girl for about a year and a half. And not Melinda. This is PM, pre-Melinda. We knew each other, though. Anyways, I don't know, things weren't going the best. And so kind of had some emotional angst in the background there. We probably worked on this painting for, I don't know, 3 weeks or so. And I remember one class period where I didn't even paint. I sat down on the floor against the wall, and I had my sketchbook out, and I just kind of journaled just some of the feelings that I was having and what I was going through. And the painting process was awful. There is a time, especially if you're making abstract art, where the painting just looks and feels like mud, like nothing's just going right. And we have this kind of joke that sometimes you'll look down at your palette of just your colors, and that looks like a better painting than what you're actually trying to make, you know, and it's just daubs of color in your smears from mixing colors. And it was just kind of a brutal process, and you're just kind of fumbling your way through this thing, not exactly sure what you're going towards, but knowing that what you have on the canvas is not it, so you got to keep at it. And I remember this one bit where, so I had the nails going through plywood, and of course, as the nails go out the other end, some of the plies, you know, break off. And I don't know if you ever looked closely at plywood, but sometimes you have like these little black thin sheets in between. So you had this area of the wood color and this black. And I don't know, it just looked really cool. So I was trying to figure out how to create the effect of that. And so I just had kind of a, you know, like a yellow ochre color for the wood and then black. And I kind of partially mixed it on my brush, and I would just kind of do these motions back and forth, kind of like a grid, you know, up and down, left and right. And I can't even explain why I had just faith in this process, but I just knew if I just do this over and over and over again, eventually it's going to work out. And it did. Which, another kind of side note, you know, you've heard that quote, something about, like, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. I don't really buy into that quote anymore, because I was doing the same thing over and over, and each time I was expecting a different result. And the result was different. Ironically, I think that quote's attributed to Einstein, and, you know, with his theory of relativity, he kind of brought three-dimensional space and time together into kind of a four-dimensional continuum. But if you think about it, every time you're doing something, it's a slightly different time than when you just previously did it. So even if you're doing the same thing, it's a different experience. So I find it ironic that he's the one that made that quote. But anyways, it was, you know, it's a lot of times what this art is, right? You're trying something and doing things, and sometimes the same process over and over, but each time the paint just mixes slightly differently, and you kind of get a different effect, and, you know, it's not a logical engineering type process, right? It's not like you have this formula for how these things go together, and or like a computer program, right? You run these series of steps and it, you know, runs this program. It's not that process, but it's kind of a give and take a dialogue, a communication between you and the artwork, and it's making a mark and trying to gauge its effect, right? Is this matching what I'm thinking, feeling at this time? And it's a different way of seeing. And it's kind of torture as you're going through it. But I ended up, and here's the piece right here. There was a moment where I made a couple last marks, and I stood back. And it was like scales falling from my eyes. Because I was looking at a visual representation of how I've been feeling that month. Again, not a kind of a one-to-one thing, this color means that, or this, you know, is that feeling, or, you know, this mark is this event or something in my life, but just the sum total of the emotional effect of these marks all together came together. And it's, in one sense, not so much me looking at the painting, but the painting was looking at and seeing me, right? You feel when you connect with a person, right, you feel seen and acknowledged. And I kind of had that experience in making this painting. And that was it. I was, from that, I remember thinking to myself, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Haven't figured out how to financially make that the case. I'm still in the starving artist part of my career and have been for the past 30 years, but that's all right. The process, you know, even if I haven't been making things like I would like to, I'm always taking pictures with my phone, random pictures of, you know, it's like, oh, just the angle of, you know, these beams or something from this perspective looks kind of cool, and I'll take a picture of it. Seeing is a constant artistic activity for me. And it does open up. Yes, it is visual, but it's also emotional and physical. And so I hope to kind of go through some of these things that I've learned and approached as a way of maybe helping you guys appreciate art a little bit more, especially when we have our art of the week every Sunday, to maybe, but that process of seeing and looking and opening yourself up in different ways is a practice of opening and seeing in different ways that can include a spiritual insight. All right, so what is this class going to be about? In good Church of Christ fashion, I'm going to start with what it's not. This will not be an art history class, all right, but there will be some historical context at time. It does help. It can both help and hinder. But I'll try to throw some in. It's not a how to make art class. It's not a design 101. But we will look at different, you know, what we call elements of art. Line, color, form, and principles of design. You know, how things are composed on the canvas or sculpture or something like that. Most of it is going to be particular art and or artists that have helped me see differently. So just want to kind of share that with you. Potential topics and questions. Why is that considered art? We'll try to hit on some of that. Can your kindergartner really do that? I would argue no, but it kind of looks like they would be able to. How being bad at bowling can help you look at art. And then permission granted, if you need the permission. It's okay not to like some of this stuff. Truthfully, many of the artists didn't like things at first either. Picasso's Guernica did not get a good reception when it was first shown. Art critics slammed it. Other artists were like, what is this? And really, what often happens in the art world is you get a few people that connect with it and they champion it and help others to see what they saw, what the artists maybe saw, and opens it up. So I like to include, kind of anecdotal stories from art history of artists fighting with each other or not liking this or all that stuff. So that's why I hope you're... There'll be one particular artist. I'll warn you. Melinda hates it when I talk about that guy. anyways, that's all I have for today. Any questions or anything that you have or want to talk about? Yeah.
So how long total did it take you to make that painting?
It was probably about 3 weeks, I think. 3 to 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. How long did it take you to make that?
The assignment we had, it was about 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks. And we would meet, the art classes would, the studio classes, they were like 3.5 hour classes twice a week. I think mine finished before some others did. I think I had like a day where everyone else was still working on theirs and mine was pretty much done. I did, some little touch-ups. You always find something when you look at it. It's like, oh, need to clarify that a little bit. But for the most part, it was done. I was able to just kind of walk around and look at other people's paintings and stuff that they were doing. But, yeah. Nolan?
Just a question in terms of if it's art, a spiritual journey, or something tied into there, are you going to, do we dare tread into the area of separating art and artist? Because, you're bringing up Picasso, and right now he's not very popular.
Yes.
Because of the kind of person he was.
Exactly.
And I run into that with film stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this is a really great movie. The guy that made it's a totally... reprehensible person.
Yes.
But in terms of the expression and what it is that is tying together, do we want to dance in that at all? Do you plan to? I understand staying away from it.
I'll try to touch on that. But that is a concern, right? Especially as Christians, where we want to live an upright life. We want to promote what is praiseworthy, and when some of the creators of things that we might consider praiseworthy are not so praiseworthy and upright, what do we do with that? And because Picasso's a big one, and there will be another class that focuses quite a bit on him too. It's troubling, but. We'll leave it for that. But I think Kathy had some.
I loved what you said about when you were looking at when you looked at the art you were creating, and it was like it was looking back, and it just took me to like you're in a deep meditation, and also took me to maybe it was you looking deeply into your own eyes,
Yeah, in fact, some artists, it's very much a process of self-discovery. You'll do something and then you'll spend just some time looking at it to kind of figure out who is this, what have I been about, what's on my mind, and sometimes you don't know until you've seen it. Still, you see it staring back at you in your artwork.
Two things. One, since you're talking about this art and kind of gave a little backstory, I didn't know if you wanted to share even kind of the moment when you were like, I don't know if I can be an art, like the phone call to your mom.
Oh.
And kind of that thought. And then thing two, I think some people here kind of know a little bit of your background, but a lot of people here know you as a high school math teacher. I didn't know if you kind of wanted to do a little like, well, why are you teaching this class? What, you know, who is Michael outside of just a math teacher?
Good point.
So those two things.
Yeah, so first thing she was referring to, you know, I talked about not understanding this art stuff. I actually went to Pepperdine as a business major because I thought, hey, you go and you get your business degree and you make a lot of money and then you're good, right? I had a business math class the first semester. The math was no problem for me, but I just looked around and I was like, these are not my people. That was a different experience for me. I'm just like, I don't know. This just doesn't feel right for me. And so I switched my major to art because I didn't know what else to do. I was going to do art as a minor, so I already was in an art class. But that was a troubling decision because we were looking at this abstract stuff, and I didn't understand it. And I, you know, halfway through the semester, I called my mom, and I'm like, I don't know about this. I don't know if I'm ever going to get this stuff. I don't know if this is the right decision for me. And that was my freshman year. I didn't paint this until my, I think it was end of sophomore year. No, it's first semester of my junior year. So, yeah, 2 years as an art major, not knowing what I was doing. Fortunately, the classes, so I had that class at first that was a two-dimensional design class, so basically looking at, you know, compositions and elements of art on a two-dimensional, like drawings and paintings. And so that's when I was exposed to some of this abstract stuff that I didn't understand. The next couple years, I mostly just had drawing classes, and I'm like, okay, I can do this. I can draw things, you know. Person standing up there, I can draw them, and they look like it. So so it wasn't too much of a crisis moment, but yeah, so but had those experiences and then kind of culminated in this, and then I was just like on fire the last couple years, man. I just was soaking this stuff up, and very prolific time in creation. So, oh, and then, yeah, so some of you might know me as a high school math teacher. I have my undergraduate degree from Pepperdine is in art. I did go on to get an MFA, Master of Fine Arts, which in studio arts is the terminal degree. There is no PhD. You can't make things at a higher level, I guess. So I actually taught art at the college level for 4 or 5 years. I did. I covered a professor's sabbatical leave at Pepperdine, so I taught at Pepperdine for a year, and then I was an adjunct professor at ACU for about 4 years. And so art is really kind of my thing. When we moved up here, most of my artistic output was during Faith Quest and other summer camps or even worship settings like I did with Josh, you know, a few weeks ago. And so art's always kind of been my thing. When I decided to go back into education and get a degree, a second master's, in education, I am credentialed to teach art, but I was also good at math in high school, and I figured it'd be a better career move, easier to find and keep a job in math than in art. So I got my credential to teach math, and sure enough, that's what I found first and got hired right on. So, yeah, math is, I'm very much, you know, there's the two sides of your brain. The right side is more creative and artsy. The left is more logical. I'm there in both sides. Truthfully, actually more in the logical side, I think, than the artsy side. I still struggle looking at art, I'll be honest. So it's a challenge sometimes to open yourself up in those ways. So all right. Well, I think we've run our time. So thank you, and we'll see you next week.